Welcome to Straight Talk for Real Life, produced by Hewlett-Packard Enterprise. What does it take to live the happiest, fullest life possible? After all, isn't that something we all want? Today, we'll try to answer that question. We all have our list of if-onlys, you know, those things that if we had them, our life would surely be happier and fuller. If only I had more money so I could buy the things I want. If only I had closer friends or a closer family. Or if only I could find the love of my life. You get the idea. But what do the experts say? Most positive psychologists agree that a fuller, better life requires two key ingredients. First, an overall awareness of happiness and pleasure. And second, a sense of meaning and purpose. But today's guest suggests a third dimension is also critical. Want to experience a fuller, better life? Stick around. We'll explore how to live life in three dimensions, and it might just transform your journey. The purpose of this podcast is to foster discussion, not to provide advice. The information shared should never be used as an alternative to obtaining personalized advice from a healthcare professional, and listeners should seek such advice independently if they have any questions related to their physical or mental health. This podcast hosts different viewpoints, and the opinions of the speakers do not necessarily reflect the views of HPE. Hello and welcome to Straight Talk for Real Life. I'm Bob Peacock. Over 2,000 years ago, the Greek philosopher Aristotle said, "Happiness is the meaning and the purpose of life." Well, evidently, that hasn't changed over the past 2,000 years. A massive international study led by Ed Diener, one of the pioneers of positive psychology, revealed that 69% of the respondents ranked happiness as the most important thing in life, even above money, love, and health. So, if happiness is our ultimate goal, what do we need to do to cultivate a fuller, better life? Today, we're talking with an expert on happiness and the experience of a meaningful life. Dr. Shige Oishi is a distinguished professor of psychology at the University of Chicago in the United States. Along with teaching classes about happiness and positive psychology, he's also a researcher on cultural psychology, and his findings have been featured in major publications all over the world. Dr. Oishi's research suggests a third dimension is needed for a fuller, better life, something that is often overlooked, and we'll find out about that today. He's written a book titled Life in Three Dimensions: How Curiosity, Exploration, and Experience Make a Fuller, Better Life. Dr. Oishi, welcome to Straight Talk for Real Life.
Thank you so much for having me.
Before we dive into that third dimension that your research suggests is so important to a fulfilled life, let's talk briefly about each of those first two ingredients that most positive psychologists agree are needed. And that's happiness and a sense of purpose. The first dimension is happiness. Arthur C. Brooks and Oprah Winfrey wrote a book titled Build the Life You Want, The Art and Science of Getting Happier. He's a Harvard professor and a writer, and she, of course, is the American actress, producer, and talk show host that most people know. And in the book, Brooks says, happiness is not a destination, it's a direction. So rather than it being the goal of our life, it's a byproduct of how we live our life, how we live up to our values, and how our own wisdom and our actions affect other people. So we go after those things that we think are going to bring us lots of happiness, better possessions, more vacations, the right relationships, maybe the perfect appearance. And we always want more, 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 thinking it's going to make us happy. Brooks says the biggest reason people don't get happier is because they don't know what they're trying to increase. They can't define what happiness is. So my obvious first question is, what is happiness?
Right. So happiness traditionally means good luck and fortune. So for instance, Aristotle used the word eudaimonia. You is good, daemon is a good spirit, so good spirit on your side. And, you know, in order to do that, you have to have good luck and fortune. Unfortunately, in the United States, in English, American English, the happiness became something, you know, that people pursue. So, you know, original definition of happiness being good luck and fortune, then you don't necessarily say pursuit of happiness, right? Because luck or fortune might not be, we might not be able to actively pursue or actively achieve. Just if you're lucky, you have it, right? So that concept was pervasive for a long, long time, but it is really interesting, at least in the United States, that concept of happiness sort of disappeared and replaced by the satisfaction of one's desires and needs and things of that nature.
We put so much pressure on ourselves to be happy.
Exactly.
In our pursuit of happiness, our expectations or our standards of what that means can sometimes lead us in the wrong direction to feelings of unhappiness or regret, right?
Exactly. So I agree with author, Brooks, that you shouldn't probably actively pursue happiness, in part because, there's so many things in life that you have no control over. So everybody wants to be successful. And, those people who are successful, like Elon Musk, probably say, oh, I did it because I'm great, smart, and, hardworking. But the truth is, everybody's success is, byproduct of some kind of talent, of course, but also luck, right time in a right place, right? So I think that's the real difficulty of pursuit of happiness. And I like William James, the formula best, because essentially he says, happiness is the function of success and your ambitions. So, formula being success, amount of success you have divided by your ambitions.
Mm.
And typically Americans and many of us try to maximize happiness by, maximize our success. But unfortunately, when we become successful, our ambitions also grow. So proportionally, essentially, the subjective sense of happiness doesn't increase. I mean, great example is Jim Clark, who was a co-founder of Netscape in 1990s. He said initially, if I make 10 million, I'll be happy, right? But when he made 10 million, he said, oh, now I want to make 100 million. And now he makes 100 million. And then he said, oh, I want to make 1 billion. And he makes 1 billion. And then he said, oh, I want to be richer than, Larry Ellison, the co-founder of the Oracle. And unfortunately, he never achieved that. So I don't think he ever achieved happiness. But that's the problem of pursuit of happiness, that as you succeed, your ambitions also grow. So it is very, very difficult to achieve. Therefore, if you look at around the world, who's happy, right? World happiness rankings. Almost always, Finland or Denmark rank, number one.
Right.
So BBC went there in Denmark and interviewed people, like, why are you guys so happy? And Danes say, oh, we don't expect that much in life. We're grateful of, what we have. So they are really good at constraining their ambitions. So their way of increasing happiness is not maximizing success per se, but taming their ambitions. And I think that's what is very difficult, particularly for Americans, to achieve happiness.
Well, does the definition of what happiness is change depending on where you are in the world? And do other cultures place the same pressures on themselves as we do in the United States?
No, there's a great study about the pressure to be happy, and Americans tend to feel pressure so much more than, people who live in Asia and elsewhere.
Well, would most people say that happiness is still their number one desire?
So I don't know whether they do, but, my advisor, Edina, when he did the huge international survey, as you said, 69% of the respondents from 39 countries essentially said 7 on the 1 to 7 point scale, how important is happiness? So I think a lot of people still say happiness is their ultimate goal.
Okay, so that's happiness. Now let's talk about the second ingredient or dimension, if you will, that researchers agree is critical for a fuller, better life. And that's having meaning and purpose in your life, a sense of fulfillment from working toward personal values and goals and serving other people.
Exactly.
In a graduation speech given about probably 10 years ago, former First Lady Michelle Obama encourage graduates to be great, she said. Build great lives for yourselves. And she said, please, please, always, always do your best to help others do the same. Helping others seems to be a major element in having a fuller life. Is that right?
Exactly. So the critique of happiness or personal happiness is that, you know, somebody might feel happy about their lives. Then does that mean he led a good life? So essentially, the people who emphasize meaning or meaningfulness is emphasizing that the good life is essentially somebody doing a good deed and making a difference and contribution to society. So if the personal happiness is to make yourself happy, essentially to have a meaningful life is essentially to make others happy, even at the expense of one's own happiness. Mm.
So what are some ways that we can put more purpose and meaning into our lives?
Yeah. So the meaning is very, very subjective. We are often surprised when we hear the news somebody ended their own lives, and especially if this person appeared to be very, you know, accomplished. So I remember an economist I respect ended his life, and it was so shocking to me because he was loved by many. He made a substantial contribution to the economics, and actually he worked in the government as well. So I thought the contribution is so clear, but sometimes the person who lives that life doesn't necessarily see that. So the important component of the meaningful life is the significance, whether you feel like your life has some kind of significance to the world. The second part is the sense of directions and sense of purpose. Is your life driven by a larger purpose? Okay. The number three is that, like in the modern world, we have so many different roles, roles in the family, roles in the organizations, roles in the communities and so forth. And sometimes we feel torn apart, feel fragmented. But the person who feel their life is meaningful tend to feel a sense of coherence. So oftentimes, the meaning and meaningful life is defined by the three features. One is the significance, second is the purpose, and the third is the coherence.
Okay, so now let's talk about your research. Your research has shown that there's a third dimension that is just as important to cultivating a fuller, better life. What is that third dimension, and what made you realize or theorize that something else was even needed?
Yeah, exactly. So psychologically rich life is the third dimension we propose. And we define psychologically rich life as a life filled with interesting, diverse, sort of perspective-changing experiences. So in a sense, it is like the, you know, you can imagine easily who is materially rich, right? The person has huge asset, huge income, huge money. So you can imagine the financial portfolio with the full of investment. You can now imagine psychological richness, which essentially instead of money, we use the currency of, you know, stories and life experiences. So somebody who is psychologically rich have a lot of interesting stories to tell, interesting, unique experiences. And, you know, their psychological portfolio is full of unique, rich stories. So that's how I describe psychology. And the reason why I thought about 10 years ago that maybe we need the third dimension is that when we look at the empirical literature on the happiness and the meaning, namely, who is happy and who find their life to be meaningful, a lot of predictors are very much stable factors, stable social relationship, stable romantic relationship, stable job, and living in a stable, neighborhood, stable country, etc., etc. Okay, so which is fine, right? I think the happiness and meaning are clearly important for many of us. But at the same time, when you look at the correlates and predictors, it made us, my graduate students and us, feel like, boy, that's kind of boring, right? These are the people who lead very structured life, very routinized life, because they want a structure. Of course, if you want to make a difference in the world, you have to repeat the same thing, right? You have to volunteer in the same church repeatedly, for instance. So it's a life of dedication, and you have to focus on, you know, one or two causes you really care. On the other hand, when you look around, you read a lot of literature, you hear about people, then there are type of people who do not necessarily follow the prototype of happy life or meaningful life. You know, we can think about, I don't know, you know, Anthony Bourdain, who was, you know, hosting the CNN travel cook show, you know, who went all around the world, mm-hmm. and essentially introduced street food from, for instance, Southeast Asia, and, you know, bring that kind of culture to the mainstream, which is often very Western-centric, you know, culinary world. So his life is full of adventure, full of, you know, unpredictabilities and so forth. And many of us think that is a good life. Right? And so in general, we thought that we need new dimension of good life, which focus on adventure, explorations, and the curiosity.
So psychologically rich life. You wrote in your book, to foster a psychological richness, we have to be willing to lean into the unfamiliar, mm-hmm. the risky, or the challenging. How important is having a psychologically rich life to living a fuller, better life?
Yeah, so I think that the benefit of having this psychological richness is that you're putting yourself, you know, beyond the comfort zone. So if you are if you're only trying to maximize happiness, for instance, then essentially you can be happy with just hanging out with your best friends and, you know, the family members you like. You know, having the dinner often, you know, cup of coffee, taking a walk. So at the end of the, you know, your life, however, if you did that for, I don't know, 75, 80 years of your life, you know, your life is very, very small and contained, which might be the type of life you want. But at the same time, you haven't challenged yourself. You might not have discovered some new talent you might have had. You might regret in the long run that you didn't do certain things. So essentially the benefit of leading psychologically rich life is that probably you have fewer, you know, regrets at the end of the day. And, you know, you probably have fulfilled your potentials more likely than if you just try to maximize happiness and live close to your comfort zone for the most of your life.
Very interesting. You also described in your book about the power of exposure and familiarity. Mm-hmm. And as a young man, you described that when you were 18 years old, you traveled from Japan to the United States because mm-hmm. you wanted to learn about and experience a different culture. Mm-hmm. But when you got here, and we've all seen and we've done this before, you mostly hung around two or three other Japanese people right, who are right. more like you. Right. We all like that idea of variety.
Right.
So we try different restaurants, but then at the end of the day, we settle for those familiar restaurants and foods, right?
Yeah, exactly. So unfortunately, we tend to have this aversion for loss or negativity. So you know, there's a famous study by Daniel Kahneman and Amos Tversky that, you know, if you give two choices, okay, do you want to get 100% certain 450 pound versus, you know, 50% chance of getting 1,000, right? Which one would you choose? Everybody choose, sure, 450 pounds, right? Mm-hmm. But if you're an economist, of course, you calculate the expected value, then actually you're supposed to, if you are purely rational, then you're supposed to pick 50% chance of winning 100 pounds.
Right.
Because the expected value is 500 as opposed to 450 in the first case. But we do because 50-50, wow, you know, 50% chance of losing being zero. It's so powerful that we will essentially take the smaller gain, okay, for sure gain. And, you know, if you do live like that entire your life, then obviously you never experience something unexpected. And, it, you know, it's not going to be interesting life, essentially.
Another example in your book, you talk about that we underestimate how enjoyable it can be to do something unfamiliar, like talking to a stranger.
Exactly. This is a great research by Nick Epley at University of Chicago Booth, that essentially, you know, if you just make people talk to a stranger, they actually enjoy. But if you ask, what do you think? Would you enjoy talking to a stranger on the commuter train? Everybody say, no way. I rather want to just sit still, do nothing, you know. So we are really mistaken about the social interactions, that actually doing something new is surprisingly enjoyable. And, you know, we learn something new. And, you know, we did the daily diary studies, you know, 14 days. And, you know, we asked, did you meet anyone new today? Did you do anything new today? And on the day they did something new or met someone new, everybody felt happier, found their day to be more meaningful and psychologically richer than the day when they didn't meet anyone new or didn't do anything new. So, yeah, we should all do something new or, you know, try to meet somebody.
I also love the story in your book where you were talking about the differences in cultures. Mm-hmm. And you experienced that when you walked into an elevator in Japan after being in the United States. And
right.
You smiled at people. And what happened?
They freaked out. So you know, I often go back to Japan and I like to go to a department store in Japan. So I just went into the elevator. And as soon as I enter, I realized the people who are in, the Japanese people inside the elevator, just froze. So I was like, whoa, what did I do? What happened? And I just realized that I was smiling as I entered into the elevator because I lived in the US for a long time, right? And that's what you're supposed to do in the United States. In Japan, of course, if strangers smile at you, there is something wrong, right? I mean, you're not supposed to look at their eyes. And so it's threatening.
Very interesting.
Yeah. And then in Japan, it's completely opposite, right? If you smile, like, it's not polite to others. Like, don't smile at them.
I love that. So you also talked about journaling, how it can help you remember mm-hmm. and accrue all of your experiences. How do memories and storytelling help cultivate a psychologically rich life?
Right. So I think, you know, you can experience all kinds of things. You can watch 6,000, you know, films. You can read 5,000 books. But if you don't remember anything, right, it's not going to enrich your life. So ultimately, in order for experience to make your life richer, then you have to remember that, what you did and what was interesting. So, you know, we all know somebody who is extremely sensation seeking, right? Going every weekend doing something different. But sometimes those people do not necessarily feel like they're leading a psychologically rich life because they are just going for the thrill. And once the thrill is over, they need another set of thrill. Mm. In other words, each of these kinds of experiences is not adding up. On the other hand, other people who do not do new things that often, but whenever they do, they reflect upon, talk about the experience, and think about the experience, then each of these experiences is really adding up. So adding new experience into your psychological portfolio. So in order for you to have a lot of interesting experiences and stories in your, you know, portfolio, then of course you try to remember what happened. Otherwise, experience could be wasted.
Very good. I heard the other day a speaker talk about the difference between pleasure and enjoyment. Pleasure is about that instant gratification. It feels great for that moment, and it's kind of a quick dopamine hit, but it quickly goes away. Enjoyment lasts longer.
Right.
So if scrolling through social media gives me a few minutes of pleasure, then spending time with someone I really care about and having a meaningful conversation will give me more enjoyment.
Exactly. Much more enduring. So so I think the memory, you know, savoring and just, you know, those kinds of things, the journaling really help us, you know, just accrue these experiences.
You can also accumulate psychologically rich experiences by reading about other people's experiences or listening to music or looking at art and exploring and appreciating the new things that you see and hear when you do that. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. So one way to, you know, increase your psychological richness is indeed go out there in the world and just explore. But the second equally beneficial and efficient way to do it is to just appreciate the arts and, you know, literatures and things like that. So, you know, when you read the book, a really, really good book, say, you know, Remains of the Day by Kazuo Ishiguro, like you're completely transported into this, you know, literary world, this case in the 1920s and 1930s England. Right. And then just really vicariously going through and experience what the main characters are going through. And sometimes you really just, you know, feel some emotions that you haven't experienced for a long time. So I think the literature or film and artworks also are really amazing, you know, avenues to enhance your psychological richness, because that's where you really feel like your perspective has changed.
Yeah, I think in your book you said something about it has to remain in your memory and it has to change your perspective. Otherwise, it's really just entertaining.
Exactly.
But when it changes you, it really does add that psychologically rich experience.
Exactly. There's so many films I enjoy, right? Home Alone or whatever. Yeah. And, you know, during that 3 hours or so, like thoroughly transported and enjoy. But at the same time, you know, it's an entertainment and it's just a pleasure, if I, you know, borrow your words. So it just disappears as soon as it is over. Whereas some film really just lingers, right? Make you think about the character and why did he do that? And those are the things that remain in your memory and change your perspective.
Yeah, it's all about that exploration again.
I
loved in the book, you had a metaphor, a trip metaphor, where you said a happy life is like a Caribbean cruise. Everything is planned for you, where you go and what you're going to do. Everything is taken care of, but a psychologically rich life is more like a backpack trip. You have to do the planning for it, and you really never know what to expect.
Yeah, it could go really bad.
Yeah, which still could lead to that psychologically rich experience, correct?
Exactly. When you're pursuing happiness, right, the negative experiences should be avoided. So we try to be safe. On the other hand, if you're trying to maximize psychological richness, then you're not afraid of encountering potentially dangerous or negative situations. So even if you do encounter these negative situations, in the end, you can say, oh, you know, this is not the end of the world. And if I survive, then it's going to be an interesting story.
At the end of your book, you summarize the things that we can do to cultivate a psychologically rich life. And you did it in the style of a David Letterman top 10 list, which I loved. And for those who don't know, David Letterman is a comedian and talk show host who had a popular late night TV talk show here in the U.S. for years. And in each show, he would feature a top 10 list about various things, and it would end with a big closer. And you created this top 10 list for cultivating a psychologically rich life. All right, so starting with number 10, life without regrets. Too often, we regret the things that we should have or we could have done. What is your advice for living a life without regrets?
So I think that this is really important to remember. In the short run, we remember, essentially, regret things we did. We said stupid things, we did stupid, you know, said something stupid, or did something stupid. But in the long run, lifetime regret is oftentimes the things you did not do. So when you are faced with the question, should I go, should I stay? Then I would suggest just say go, because in the long run, you might regret if you didn't do it now.
Very good. Okay, number 9, freedom over security. Many choices in life come down to choosing security or freedom. What's the better choice?
So I draw on the poet Ada, you know, Kaufman. Her parents always said, important life decision boils down to this, which one is more important, freedom or security? And they said, you should always choose freedom over security, which is very difficult, right? When we have job offer, one guarantee long-term employment and benefit, and the other one sounds exciting, but no guarantee. Which one would you choose? Of course, majority of us would just choose security, secure job. But at the same time, at the end of your life, perhaps you'll regret if you didn't try freedom. And sometimes choosing freedom in the long run will give you a greater satisfaction.
That's great. Okay, number 8, don't be a specialist, be a generalist. Too much specialization or focusing on the tree can lead us to miss the beauty of the forest. So your recommendation is to stay curious, right?
Exactly. So this is one of my favorite experiments we did. When we make participants specialists, they become so uninterested in many other things. So their curiosity is substantially reduced. When we ask participants to be a generalist, then all of a sudden, you know, tangential stuff could look very interesting and they become more curious. So if you want to live a curious life, then try not to be specialist. This is my thing. That's not my thing. That's not a good, you know, way of thinking about life. So for life, we should be a generalist.
Very good. Okay, number 7. Take a dozen. We are attracted to things we're familiar with.
Right.
And by doing so, we forget the joy of exploring and discovering new things. So explain take a dozen.
Yeah. So this is a famous secretary problems in statistics and psychology as well. So your job is finding the best secretary, right? But you're interviewing, say, 100 people because there are 100, you know, applicants. How many people you actually interview, you know, carefully? Most of us just look at the first 10 or so and then decide the best person. Don't explore enough. So there's an enormous, you know, amount of data showing that we do not explore enough. So at least when you are looking for a new apartment, for instance, take a dozen heuristic, meaning at least consider 12 apartment. When you are looking for your potential mate, try to date at least 12 people, which is kind of hard, but that's the basic idea. By exploring, pushing more toward the exploration, you will find a better choice.
Very good. Number 6, find richness in familiar. Revisit your favorite band or your favorite author or artist, book or film, and look deeper for something new in the old.
Exactly. So, you know, many of us are so afraid of doing new things, right? You know, after listening to my talk, maybe you think, oh, do I have to go to Europe? Do I have to go to Southeast Asia to have a psychologically rich life? Well, if you are not that type of person, it's okay to stay close to home. Sometimes by digging deeper into the familiar, for instance, listening to your favorite band, you know, from the high school days, you might find something new. You know, reread your favorite book from your college day, for instance. You will identify with different characters now, and then you will find something new. So psychological richness can be found in the familiar area too. And especially if you're reluctant to explore the world, then I recommend dig deeper into the familiar and you might find something new.
Fantastic. Okay, these are the top 10 list for things you can do to cultivate a psychologically rich life. And we're on number 5. Mm-hmm. Don't be afraid of negative events. Mm-hmm. You wrote that many of us fall into a happiness trap. Yep. And we avoid negativity. But your reminder is that it's okay to fail. Is that right?
Yeah, and indeed, the failures, at least the initial failures, make your life and story more interesting. Imagine somebody who went to Harvard and, you know, the Yale Law School and entire their life super successful. Is it the interesting story? Not at all, right? The interesting story is somebody who struggled early on and or, you know, fell out of the favors and just come back or something like that. So whenever you feel like you're in a deep, you know, hole, I think you should think, okay, it's okay. We can use this experience as a springboard. And then just, you know, I will grow, I will learn something new. And, you know, just this will make my life more interesting and psychologically richer. So when you're trying to maximize happiness, the happiness trap is that you're trying to avoid all the negative stuff. But actually, the negative stuff is the most important ingredient for a psychologically rich life. So use it.
And that which does not kill us makes us stronger, right?
Exactly.
Okay, we are at number 4, write and tell. And this is about like journaling, telling your story. It's a great way to remember experiences.
Exactly. So if you want to remember your experiences, you know, write and tell somebody is the best way to keep in your brain and in your memory. And that way you'll keep accumulating interesting stories and, you know, enriching your psychological portfolio.
Okay. Top 10 list on how to cultivate a psychologically rich life. Number 3, be spontaneous. Stop by a resale shop, a used bookstore, or a gallery, because when you explore, you never know what you're going to find.
Right. So our life is extremely structured, extremely routine. And in order for us to get things done, right, we have to routinize. We have to just make sure we get things done. But if everybody is, you know, living life with a full schedule, then you have so little room for a spontaneous outing, right? So when was the last time you spontaneously went out, hung out with your friend or, you know, from high school or college? I mean, for me, that would be long, long, long time ago, because we know everybody is the packed schedule, everybody is so busy. But the best memory is often made by spontaneous outing. Right. My case, I was driving back from Baltimore to Charlottesville, and I saw the sign Annapolis, and I was like, oh, Annapolis, anyone want to go to Annapolis? And then to my surprise, my wife and kids said, yeah, let's go. So at the last moment, I just, you know, turned the wheel quickly and got out and then went to Annapolis. And years later, we still talk about it. So I think we want to be spontaneous once in a while.
Absolutely. And really close to that is number 2, be playful. Yeah. Be open to being foolish. Hang out with younger people and dance like nobody's watching, right?
Exactly. So really related to the scheduled, structured life. You know, we adult professionals are so serious, right? The business is so serious. We have to do X and Y every day. Our performance is closely measured, you know, every quarter, every month. So when you live in corporate life or professional life like that, we often forget to be like a kid, like being playful. And I really love what Erik Erikson, the psychiatrist, said about the being playful. Being playful is taking a vacation from economic and the social realities and living a life somewhere between the reality and the fantasy. Just like 5 years old, just like a dog, you know, chasing the tennis ball. And we really are rarely in a playful, state of mind. So I think it is important to remind us, it is okay once in a while to deviate from the routines and not finish all the to-do list.
The number one lesson for achieving psychological richness, borrowing from a really famous brand, just do it.
Right. Nike is so just do it, right? It's important. Essentially, we are faced with, should I stay or should I go? Questions again and again. And I think it is really important to say to ourselves, just do it. If you think about doing it, why don't you do it? Because even if it was a mistake in the long run, at least you can say you did it and you learned something new. So my final message to everybody is, when you have the question, should I do it? Just do it. You won't regret it. If you already have happiness and meaning, then maybe your life is very stable. And sometimes, you know, you might benefit from changing and shaking up a little bit to get the new perspective and, you know, fresh sense of life, liveliness. So I think ideally we want to live in all three dimensions, but I would say it's a good life if we can have at least one of the three.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Oishi.
Thank you so much for having me.
The title of Dr. Shige Oishi's book is Life in Three Dimensions: How Curiosity, Exploration, and Experience Make a Fuller, Better Life. Our hope for you is that you live life in three dimensions, that you experience joy and happiness, that you feel a sense of purpose, and that you explore experiences that, along with happiness and a sense of purpose, will give you the fullest, best life possible. If you're an HPE team member, there are many resources to help you be the very best you, and they are available to you and your family members through the HPE Global Wellness Program. If you're in the U.S., you'll find them on myhperewards.com. And if you're outside the U.S., you'll find them on the Global Wellness page. My thanks to my guest today, Dr. Shige Oishi, for sharing his research. We hope it was helpful to you. If so, please tell your friends and coworkers about our podcast. And until next time, may you make happiness a priority in your life. Cultivate it. Share it with others and embrace every opportunity to be the happier, more fulfilled person you're becoming every day. Thanks for listening. Let's talk again soon.